This morning, the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, pushed back against acting Homeland Security Secretary Elaine Duke's claim yesterday that hurricane recovery in Puerto Rico is a good news story. Here's San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulin Cruz on CNN Today.
When you're drinking from a creek, it's not a good news story. When you don't have food for a baby, it's not a good news story. When you have to pull people down from their buildings, because, you know, I'm sorry, but that really upsets me and frustrates me.
And she went on to say, it's a people are dying news story.
In tweets last night and this morning, President Trump defended his administration's Puerto Rico response. He wrote, "Wish press would treat fairly, and big decisions will have to be made as to the cost of rebuilding Puerto Rico." Let's bring in our politics roundtable. Joining us today, Tolu Olorunipa, who is a White House reporter for Bloomberg News. Hi, Tolu.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. And Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Jeremy.
And Ron, let me start with you. What do you make of the Trump administration's response to Puerto Rico? There are still a lot of people in dire straits there more than a week after the storm hit.
First of all, we should say this was a terrible hurricane, and it was far worse than anything that has hit directly on the island in many, many years, decades. So there was probably a disbelief that it could be this bad, and that obviously affected the preparation on all levels. But the big contrast here between what's been done for Puerto Rico and what was done for Texas and Florida is rankling, not only to the people of Puerto Rico, but to fair-minded people anywhere, to look and see and ask, did the administration do everything that it had done for American citizens in Florida and Texas, in Puerto Rico, where they are American citizens? Perhaps we should all reflect on the reluctance of some people in this country to realize that.
Well, and Tolu, the Washington Post did another contrast. They concluded that the response to the earthquake in Haiti was much faster than the response to Puerto Rico. 2 days is how fast it was, even though there was no warning of the earthquake, as there was a warning with Maria that this was going to slam Puerto Rico. Thousands more U.S. troops went to Haiti, although the Post did point out there are legal restrictions to sending troops into a U.S. territory as opposed to a foreign country. But more to the point, the president didn't show leadership, talking about football players while on that, you know, that deadly split screen that lawmakers have to watch out for. The CNN was showing the devastation in Puerto Rico. Your thoughts on what he said in the days after the hurricane?
Yeah, it definitely looked like the president, his mind was not on Puerto Rico over the weekend. As the worst of this situation was starting to play out, the president's mind appeared to be on culture wars over the NFL, over the national anthem. And the president, when he finally got around to sort of commenting on this week, he said, you know, Puerto Rico is different from Florida and Texas, where he did show a little bit more focus, saying that basically it's in the middle of an ocean, it's an island, and it's hard to get assets over there. And I think that article sort of pointing out the difference between the Haiti earthquake sort of undercuts that argument. We do have assets. Puerto Rico is part of the United States, and we do have the ability to get over there. And the fact that, the rhetoric we're hearing from the president now is that Puerto Rico was already in a lot of trouble before the hurricane hit. Their electrical grid was struggling. They're, you know, suffering from debt. So it's definitely a different approach than what we saw during hurricanes earlier this year with Texas and Florida. And people are wondering why the difference. And that's a question that the White House has not yet fully answered.
Well, the president's mind may have been on what just happened in Alabama, too, this week. Former Ten Commandments Judge Roy Moore sending a shockwave through the Republican Party by winning that runoff election to fill Jeff Sessions' Senate seat. Here's former Trump chief strategist Steve Bannon campaigning for Moore this week.
And you're going to see in state after state after state, people that follow the model of Judge Moore, that do not need to raise money from the elites, from the crony capitalists, from the fat cats in Washington, D.C., New York City, Silicon Valley.
Ron, was this a watershed moment? And given the things that Roy Moore has said in the past, lock up homosexuals, saying there are communities in the U.S. living under Sharia law, are Republicans going to be afraid to get too close to him?
Yes, many are going to pedal away from him as quickly as they pedaled away from Todd Akin in Missouri a few years ago, who was saying embarrassing things with regard to women's biology. And many Republicans were making it clear they did not want any part of that particular Republican nominee for the Senate, and he did lose. So we will see probably some of that behavior again with Judge Roy Moore. It's hard not to call him that, even though he's already been removed twice from the Alabama State Supreme Court. People still call him that as though he had three names. This was called a political earthquake, but in many respects, it was more like a political hurricane because in this case, there was definitely warning. We knew weeks ago that Roy Moore was running ahead of the Republican field, that he was likely to win, that he was likely to win this runoff. And the Republican Party's response was just to pour in more money, send Donald Trump down there, the president of the United States, endorsing Luther Strange, but also sending signals at the same time that he wouldn't mind having Roy Moore win the primary and that he would endorse him if he did.
Yeah, so NPR's Ron Elving there and Tolu Olorunipa from Bloomberg News helping us look at the past week. And I want to ask, at the end of the week, Tolu, do we know where we are on health care reform? The Republicans announced they didn't have the votes to vote on their plan, and everybody thought, there. That is it, the nail in the coffin. And then President Trump says, oh, no, it's just because somebody was not well and we didn't have our yes votes, and so we're going to do it again.
That's right. It's a major question about whether or not the president is in denial about this health care reform effort. He is the only one sort of touting this line that, oh, we have the votes. It's just because someone was in the hospital. The White House press secretary was asked about this because everyone wanted to know which senator was in the hospital. And it turns out there is no senator in the hospital. This is Thad Cochran of Mississippi, who is a yes vote. He has been having some health problems, but he's recovering at home. And his vote would not change the balance of the health care situation. There are three senators that have come out publicly against the health care bill. And those were three different senators who, whether or not Thad Cochran was there or not, would vote against the bill, and the bill would have failed if it had come up. But I think the broader message is that the White House and Republicans are saying that they're not giving up on this effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. They are going to try to put together the votes. They're going to try to turn some of those no votes into yes votes over the next few months, and early in 2018, they're going to take another shot at this strategy of trying to fulfill this campaign.
Just to follow up, though, the open enrollment for Obamacare is November 1st.
Yeah, and it does not appear that President Trump and his administration are going to try to comply with the current law and make sure that the law is upheld and that it moves forward. They're trying to undermine it with the hopes that it implodes, and then next year they can come and get more support for their alternative. Open enrollment is about to start, and the Trump administration is taking money away from advertising, taking money away from the various programs that help people get enrolled and help people know about healthcare, the healthcare markets. So it will be very interesting to see whether or not Congress pushes back on that. We've heard some talks about a bipartisan effort to shore up the current Affordable Care Act markets. And if that passes, it will be very interesting to see whether or not President Trump sort of accepts this as a law of the land or vetoes that and tries to continue to undermine Obamacare with the hopes that very soon he will get to fulfill his promise of repealing and replacing it.
I have to ask about airplane gate. Tom Price, the Health and Human Services Secretary, just one of the cabinet officials under fire for taking private planes or government planes at a huge taxpayer expense. The president says he is not happy about it. And Secretary Price went on Fox News to explain and say he's reimbursing the government for the cost of his seat on the flights. Let's listen.
We've heard the concerns. I've heard the concerns. I've heard the criticisms. And in order to make certain that people appreciate that my respect for the taxpayer is as strong as it can be and always has been in my 40-year career, we think it's important to do a number of things. One is to say there will be no private air charters at HHS going forward.
Ron, it seems to me that this, combined with the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt also doing travel on these kinds of jets, as well as Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, it really steps on President Trump's message that he's trying to drain the swamp and be for the little guy.
It is not exactly a populist airline that they're riding on. They're riding on military planes, in Tom Price's case, to the tune of something like $500,000. All of his travel on charters, private charters, adding up to another $500,000, something like $1 million in questionable air flights just since May. He's also been flying members of his family around and some of these other people in the Trump administration as well, all of whom are well known over the course of their careers as people who want to squeeze a government dollar. But now that they are in the administration, in the cabinet, they feel that there is a necessity for them to be on super secure planes with super secure communications, even if that means taking a $25,000 charter from Washington, D.C. to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, when they could get a train ticket for under $100.
If the call is that important, just stay on the ground for another hour. That's what I would say.
That would be an alternative.
Well, that's Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent. We've also been speaking with Tolu Olorunipa, White House reporter for Bloomberg News, about this week that was. And guess what? There's another one around the corner. So, gentlemen, thank you both, and touch back with you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.